The Truth News Network. You like it straight and can't find that anywhere? Rest easy. Always get the straight shot and always get the truth from the Truth News Network. Here with today's Truth Chapter is Dan Newman.
We are all over the truth for you here, as we always are at the Truth News Network. Hello, everybody. I'm Dan Newman. Thank you so much for joining us here today. A special part two story that we began yesterday. And a notice here, before reading or listening to today's story, please go back to part one that was published yesterday, December 17th. The title of today's is Robert Mueller, One of the Best or One of the Worst, part two. We'll start here. Do you remember the name Sandy Berger? Berger was an American political consultant who served as the United States National Security Advisor for President Bill Clinton from March 14, 1997 until January 20th of 2001. Before that time, he served as the Deputy National Security Advisor for the Clinton administration from January 20th, 1993 until March 14, 1997. Here's what Berger did and how it's applicable to our story today about Robert Mueller. On July 19th of 2004, it was revealed that the United States Department of Justice was investigating Berger for unauthorized removal of classified documents in October of 2003 from a National Archives reading room prior to his testimony given before the 9/11 Commission. The documents were five classified copies of a single report commissioned from Richard Clark covering internal assessments of the Clinton administration's handling of the unsuccessful 2000 Millennium attack plots. An associate of Berger said Berger took one copy in September of 2003 and four copies in October of 2003, allegedly by stuffing the documents into his socks and his pants. Pretty clandestine operations there, don't you think? Berger subsequently lied to investigators when questioned about the removal of those documents. In April of 2005, Berger pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge of unauthorized removal and retention of classified material from the National Archives in Washington, D.C. I want to point something out there. First of all, Berger served under a Democrat president, Bill Clinton. He lied to the Justice Department. And of course, we know regarding the current Mueller investigation of Donald Trump and the Trump campaign for colluding with Russians, that anytime you lie to any member of the Justice Department, especially the FBI, it's a felony and you're going to go to jail. You're going to do some time. Of course, Berger did not. He didn't have to plead guilty to lying to the Justice Department investigators. He got a misdemeanor. Berger was fined $50,000, sentenced to serve 2 years of probation and 100 hours of community service, and stripped of his security clearance for 3 years. The Justice Department initially said Berger only stole copies of classified documents and not originals, as if that matters. But the House Government Reform Committee later revealed that an unsupervised Berger had been given access to classified files of original, uncopied, uninventoried documents on terrorism. During the House Government Reform Committee hearings, Nancy Keegan-Smith, who was the director of the Presidential Document Staff at the National Archives and Records Administration, acknowledged that she had granted Berger access to original materials in her office. On December 20, 2006, Inspector General Paul Brockfield reported that Berger took a break to go outside without an escort. Quoting here, "In total during this visit, he removed four documents. Mr. Berger said he placed the documents under a trailer in an accessible construction area outside Archives 1. That's the main archives building. Berger acknowledged having later retrieved those documents from the construction area and returned with them to his office." Wow. A very clandestine operation there by an advisor national security advisor of President Clinton. On May 17, 2007, Berger relinquished his license to practice law as a result of the Justice Department investigation, saying, quote, "I have decided to voluntarily relinquish my license. While I derive great satisfaction from years of practicing law, I have not done so for 15 years and do not envision returning to the profession. I am very sorry for what I did and I deeply apologize," end quote. By giving up his license, Berger avoided cross-examination by the bar counsel regarding details of his thefts. So in other words, they never heard anything, they being the Justice Department, or the bar counsel, never heard anything from the horse's mouth. He was never questioned. Of course, the FBI was involved and the Justice Department investigated the Berger incident. That meant Robert Mueller was tasked to oversee that investigation. As aggressive as Mueller can be about pursuing the wrong man, he showed surprising leniency and laxity when it came to the case of Samuel Sandy Berger. He was found to have stuffed the documents in his socks and otherwise hidden them. His punishment was that he was allowed to plead guilty in 2005 to one misdemeanor. He served no jail time, but had to give up his security clearance for 3 years. Slap on the hand. The staff of Representative Tom Davis, Republican of Virginia, authored a 60-page report about the theft of the documents in which he said, quote, "The Justice Department was unacceptably incurious about Berger's archives visits." Are you seeing a bit of a double standard here? What's good for the goose is not necessarily good for the gander. Under Mueller and his FBI, if you were a Democrat, you were pretty much going to get a pass. But then what happens if you were a Republican? Then there was Scooter Libby. As lax and lenient as the Department of Justice was with Sandy Berger, the opposite was true in other cases. After Valerie Plame's identity as a CIA employee was leaked, a special counsel operation was set up to investigate the leak. Mueller's deputy, James Comey, pressured John Ashcroft, who was then the Attorney General, to recuse himself from the case on the grounds he had potential conflicts of interest. Sound familiar? Comey named Patrick Fitzgerald. Who is Patrick Fitzgerald? Well, he was and is a very close friend and godfather to one of Comey's children, to the role of special counsel. Mueller, Comey, and Fitzgerald all knew the whole time that Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage was the actual leaker. They knew that the whole time. Yet they set things up so Fitzgerald would aggressively investigate the Bush administration for 3 years, jailed a journalist for not giving up a source, First Amendment, and pursued both Karl Rove and Scooter Libby. What's the difference there? Any of this ring true? One, a Democrat, the others, Republicans? Comey even expanded the investigation's mandate within weeks of setting up the special counsel. Sound familiar? Libby, who was later pardoned by President Trump, was rung up on a process charge in part thanks to prosecutorial abuse by Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald encouraged a witness to give false testimony by not providing exonerating evidence to her and Libby's attorneys. The Wall Street Journal and Commentary have write-ups on this saga. We're just getting started, folks. There's a whole lot more here about James Comey, about Robert Mueller, the other side of the pair. Maybe make what's going on now in the Russian collusion special investigation a little clearer for you. Sit tight. We're back with more in just a moment at the Truth News Network.
Long live the courageous. May God bless and keep you always. May you always the tenacious. May you always do The ones who push forward and give back. Long live the greater good. The helping hand. Those who fall and get back up. And long live the truck with the strength to overcome. The will to outwork. And the commitment to outlast them all. Ram, proven to last.
TNN, when only the truth will do. TNN, the Truth News Network.
We're back to our second part of examining Robert Miller, the other guy. How different he really is in practice as an attorney, as an investigator, as a former FBI director, than he is in the public persona as painted by the fawning media. And he's investigating Russian collusion for the 2016 election. Let's look at some real election meddling. In 2016, the FBI kept getting involved in the presidential election. Go figure, right? Political considerations rather obviously played a role in James Comey showing deference to Clinton in July of 2016 in the investigation into her mishandling of classified information and documents. Political considerations also played a role, he says subconsciously, in Comey's decision to announce a probe into Clinton's mishandling of classified information had been reopened shortly before the election. It wasn't the first time the FBI meddled in a U.S. election. Remember way back in 2008, that's when Barack Obama was elected president? Senator Ted Stevens, a Republican from Alaska, Republican, just pointing that out again, was indicted by a federal grand jury following a lengthy investigation by the FBI. He was found guilty 8 days before Election Day. He was running for re-election as Alaska senator. Stevens narrowly lost his re-election bid as a result. He died in a plane crash a couple of years later. The prosecutors in that case repeatedly withheld exculpatory evidence that would have yielded a different verdict. Think about that, folks. This is a sitting U.S. senator. Yeah, he's from Alaska, way out there. But investigators in the federal government, in the FBI, withheld evidence that would have yielded a different verdict. The convictions were voided by U.S. District Court Judge Emmett G. Sullivan, who called it the worst case of prosecutorial misconduct he's ever seen. Stevens' attorney complained about FBI abuses and said this, "To us, while this is a joyful day and we're happy that Senator Stevens can resume a normal life without the burden that he's carried over these last years," he said, "at age 85, it's a very sad story too, because it's a warning to everyone in this country that any citizen can be convicted if the prosecutor ignores the Constitution of the United States." Just a reminder here, and something that's going to play into the news the next few days, that judge, U.S. District Court Judge Emmett G. Sullivan, is the same judge that is looking at the Mueller probe at present. Sullivan is the one that forced Mueller to turn over all those documents that the FBI had heretofore kept hidden. Why? Because some of the same investigators that withheld that exculpatory evidence in the Ted Stevens case are working for Robert Mueller on the present case, Russian collusion between the Trump campaign and Russians. Let's move along. Another black mark on Mueller's record at the FBI was the pursuit of what the Bureau dramatically claimed was an Israeli spy ring operating out of the Pentagon. The news broke in August of 2004 that a spy working for Israel was in the Department of Defense. It turned out that the Bureau had gone after a policy analyst who had chatted with American lobbyists at the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the AIPAC. Charges were also pursued against two AIPAC employees. Those charges were later dropped, and the sentence of the first person was dropped from 13 years to 10 months of house arrest and some community service. Sentences overturned, sentences dropped. Mueller investigations, findings, people charged. All that sound a little familiar? In that case, the Washington Post wrote this. The conspiracy case against two former AIPAC lobbyists came to an inglorious end in May when the government dropped all charges after 3.5 years of pretrial maneuvers. Now just think about what those 3.5 years of pretrial maneuvers cost those people that were defendants, those people that were charged. Federal defense in federal cases like this are unbelievably costly. Those people were innocent. Charges were later dropped after spending millions of dollars defending themselves. That was a curious case. First, the lobbyists, Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman, were charged under an obscure section of the Espionage Act of 1917, a law that had been used only once before, unsuccessfully, and never against private citizens for disclosing classified information. Second, they were targets of a bizarre sting in which they were fed false information suggesting that the lives of U.S. and Israeli operatives in Iraq were at risk and that American officials were refusing to take steps to protect them. The accusation was not that they brokered that information to some foreign enemy, but that they offered it to everybody they could, hoping, among other things, to get a reporter from the Post to publish it so that it might draw the attention of the right U.S. officials and save U.S. lives. In short, even if the two were guilty as charged, they looked more like whistleblowers than they did like spies. It turned out the probe was led by David Zaddy, the same man who notoriously missed Russian spy Robert Hansen in his midst while he spent years targeting an innocent man named Brian Kelly, an undercover officer at the CIA. For this very good work, guess what Robert Mueller did? He named David Zaddy Assistant Director for Counterintelligence at the FBI. And, of course, there is the Weissman factor. Remember that name, Andrew Weissman? Many of these examples of prosecutorial misconduct and abuse were done not by Mueller, but by his underlings. He should have been aware of what they were doing, of course, as the manager, the director of the FBI running the case, which means he should take responsibility for their errors. If he wasn't aware, that's a very bad sign regarding his competence to supervise his special counsel deputy, Andrew Weissman. And we have written previously extensively here at truthnewsnet.org of Weissman's long and egregious prosecutorial record. If Mueller had no effective supervision against the abusers of the above underlings, why would anyone trust him to supervise his good buddy, Andrew Weissman, whom he picked to run lead on his probe of Trump? Weissman destroyed the accounting firm Arthur Andersen, which once had 85,000 employees. Thanks to Weissman's prosecutorial abuse, jurors were not told that Arthur Andersen didn't have criminal intent when it shredded documents. Weissman and his other investigators knew that, withheld that information from the jury. The Supreme Court unanimously overturned the conviction, but it was too late to save the company. What's that old saying? You can't put the genie back in the bottle. Oh, Weissman also creatively criminalized a business transaction between Merrill Lynch and Enron. In that one, four executives from Merrill Lynch were sent to jail. Weissman concocted unprecedented charges and did not allow the executives to get bail, causing massive disruption to the families before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed almost all of Weissman's case. That's the guy that is Mueller's lead dog in the attack on Trump and the Trump campaign. So this is the guy put in charge of chasing and finding proof that the current president, his campaign staff, and others colluded with Russians to positively influence the 2016 election in Trump's favor. There apparently was no collusion. So Mueller morphed the investigation into obstruction of justice. Apparently, there's no obstruction been found. Now we understand Mueller is looking into Trump business transactions as far back as the 1980s. Does that sound like a witch hunt to you? Let's not forget, one could also argue that the above failures, except the Stevens case, were actually James Comey's fault. That's arguably true as well. But it also shows just how bizarre it is that Mueller was named to investigate a situation in which his friend and partner in prosecutorial abuse in the past is so intimately involved this time. I am certain that Americans expect all those in national public office to be honorable, to be honest, and to serve Americans within the positions for which they were elected or appointed. That includes the President of the United States. If and when there is real injustice, illegalities, and constant efforts to hide things from Americans, we all get an uneasy feeling. When the Mueller probe was announced, I was skeptical. But my knowledge there are so many things in D.C. I don't know or understand, I was perfectly willing for Mueller and company to take a look. But pretty much 2 years later, there's no there there. They try to justify the $25 million taxpayers have paid directly to fund the investigation with the indictments that have come from that investigation, as it should be. But as the light has shined on those specific indictments, we've learned they were either against Russians, who were simply charged and will certainly never show up in American court to stand trial, or were not for actions that people committed to collude with Russia in any way, but stem from actions taken by Mueller's team in setting up those being investigated to misstate something, which is technically a lie. Of course, if you work for the FBI, you can lie to anybody that you're investigating with no recourse. Those people have been charged or threatened to be charged for a federal felony. Question. Does that sound like justice to you? It may be justice, but every American citizen is promised equal justice under the law. I'm pretty certain General Michael Flynn, George Papadopoulos, Michael Cohen, and others would tell us their justice was not and is not equal under the law in the probe by Mueller and company. If it quacks and if it waddles, it's almost always a duck. And Robert Mueller is quacking. Hey, that's a wrap on our two-part series, More Exposure of Who Robert Mueller Really Is. What's he up to? We'll just have to let it play out now. The horse is out of the barn. Stay close to us. As facts come available, we'll pass them along on this and other matters. We always tell you the truth. We give you the facts to make your own decisions at the Truth News Network. So long, everybody.
Facts and evidence is all you'll see and hear on TNN,
the Truth News Network.
Find it exclusively
at truthnewsnet.org.